Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's Veterans Day, November 11th. Currently 37 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 35 degrees. And National Weather Service has to say sunshine and a high of 60 today. We've got mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 39. Mostly cloudy and 60 on Wednesday. Sunshine and 60 on Thursday. We've got some rain moving in Thursday night and cooler temperatures. By Friday, our high is 49. We've got a 80% chance of a rain-snow mix, dropping down to freezing Friday night with more chance of rain and snow on Saturday, warming to just 47. And again, 35 degrees in the Heber Valley. Enjoy today. Sunshine and 65. Mostly cloudy and 65 tomorrow. Back to sunshine and 65 on Thursday, again with chance of some rain Thursday night. Pretty good chance of some rain, maybe even a snow mix on Friday with a high of just 54. Friday night, temperatures dropping down to 28. We could definitely see a chance of some snow. And it looks like it's lingering into Saturday morning, but we should see some sunshine by Saturday afternoon. Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Later on, South Summit Superintendent of Schools Greg Mon calling in with details on last night's school board meeting. And from the People's Health Clinic, CEO Mari Lining with an update on some of the clinic's programs and operations. Well, as I mentioned, it is Veterans Day, and Wasatch Back City and County offices will be closed for the holiday. State liquor stores and post offices will also close for the federal holiday. All Summit County Library branches, as well as the Wasatch County Library, are closed today. They'll return to regular hours tomorrow. The Park City Mark and Basin Recreation Fieldhouse will be open their regular hours today. Trash pickup here in Summit County won't be affected by the federal holiday. However, in Wasatch County, trash pickup scheduled for today will be delayed until tomorrow. Most local banks are also closed for Veterans Day. Across the country, the National Park Service honors veterans and their families with its final fee-free day of the year. Anyone who visits a national park today will get in free. However, our other park fees may still apply. The Summit County Council meets tomorrow starting at 1:30 in work session. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So thanks for being here on your day off.
Thank you. You bet. It was nice to listen to you and understand that my garbage is going to get picked up today. I was actually not sure.
So. Okay. Well, it looks like a big meeting tomorrow, at least a long meeting, mostly budget related.
Yes, absolutely. A big meeting tomorrow. As you probably remember, the last time I was on, I was previewing a meeting that we actually didn't have. At the end of October, our last meeting, we had a noticing snafu that prevented us from having the meeting that time. So we've distributed that meeting's agenda throughout the rest of November, and we've done a lot this week to try and make up for that.
Okay, so tomorrow's topic will review the city manager or the county manager recommended budget, along with a general budget discussion, including employee pay and cost of living adjustments. So what are you recommending in your budget?
Yes, tomorrow is a focus on personnel, and we are recommending, we have 8 new positions. We'll be highlighting those positions and talking about those in a little bit more detail than we have so far. We are recommending a 2.7% cost of living increase to all staff-wide. That is based on the June 30th COLA adjustment that we've targeted each year. We're going to just try and benchmark to that very CPI number. And I think it's nice to call out to the council and to the community that when we raise the cost of living countywide, that's over $1 million just in and of itself. So that's $1 million that we're trying to, and 2.7% is the lowest cost of living increase we've proposed since before COVID. So we're trying to highlight that we have a big budget. We have almost 400 employees. We talk about that, the different full-time employees we have in the county. Over 60% of our budget is for personnel, so personnel related expenses. Retention and recruitment is constantly something we're talking about, something we're struggling with, and something we're trying to make decisions to do better in. So we're anxious and excited to present this to council and to kind of highlight the different personnel matters we have going on with the fiscal year 26 budget.
Okay, you mentioned 8 new positions. What are we talking about here?
We have a couple in facilities. One of the principal positions that I wanted to highlight tomorrow is a grandma position. So the Government Records and Management Act is a requirement we have to provide reports and different records to the public, to the media. And we've been trying to do this in kind of a shotgun approach. We have all these different departments that are responding to grandma requests, and we're really trying to centralize that. And I think we'll do that through the county attorney's office. But this will be just, it will take a lot off of other people's plates if we have one central grandma coordinator, and that's what this position is intended to do. So I think we've had 16 requests for new positions for fiscal year 26, and we've recommended only 8 of those, and I think they're essential. A lot of the facilities requests are around the acquisition of the Skullcandy building. That's going to take maintenance. It's going to take our facilities to manage that, and we're always acquiring more land or square footage in building space, and asking our facilities to manage that and to do more with less. And we're hoping to present those to council, and they'll be supportive of those recommendations.
Okay. We should note, though, you are not proposing any tax increase.
That's correct. We're not proposing any tax increase. And maybe along those lines, if I could highlight that we are having a special budget meeting on Friday morning. And we will be talking about the emergency services sales tax as well as transient room tax at that meeting. We're talking around the increase that we've received in that tax and what we plan on doing with it. I think there's a lot of individuals and organizations that are curious about that. We'd like to highlight that on Friday morning.
Okay. When and where?
It's at 9 a.m. And it is it's in the courthouse, but it's also, I think several of our council members are only able to join on Zoom that morning, so we'll have a Zoom presence as well.
Okay. Well, in your words, it's a big budget, so let's talk a little bit about that. Certainly some criticism floating around on social media saying that Summit County has a serious spending problem. Maybe we can walk through some of the items where it appears that some of the line items have like doubled in 4 years. I mean, the person who did this research, and I'm sorry I didn't grab his name, administration in 2021 was at $806,000. It's up to $1.4 million. That's a $600,000 increase in 4 years. Auditor's office, $244,000 to more than $590,000 this year. The biggie, mental health, $1 million spent in 2021 to more than $2.9 million this year. So What's happening here?
I would relish the opportunity to address those individually. I think when people pull numbers out of thin air without any kind of a backstory or any kind of a details, it's challenging to really wrap our heads around that. I just, when you said the auditor, I know that we've had unprecedented amounts of appeals. That the Board of Equalization is so active. We've had to request delays in meeting deadlines. Cindy and her office has done a great job. She has two full-time employees in that office that are working their guts out. If anybody would be willing and interested in talking to me about why budgets are going up, to say the budget goes up a certain percentage over time is just really hard to talk to that. We've purchased the 910 cattle ranch. We haven't closed on it yet, but we're planning on the maintenance of that 9,000 acres. That's going to take a tremendous amount of effort, of personnel, of changes. We're going to do trails and different recreation opportunities in that space. So I will be highlighting in future budgets. It's not this week on either Wednesday or Friday, but I believe it's the next Wednesday, the key changes to the budget for 2026. So if we have a $5 million larger budget or $10 million larger budget, I'm going to be highlighting what those 10 things are. I did just mention that in just providing a 2.7% cost of living increase, that's $1 million more in budget. So as the cost of everything goes up, we have to also account for that. If you've looked at other counties in the state of Utah that are going through truth and taxation this year, their reasons for doing so have been inflation. personnel. It's been really it hasn't been these key initiatives. It's really been the day-to-day costs of doing business. When we advertised for the emergency services sales tax that the voters approved over 70%, we talked about how we were trying to do this for various reasons. Emergency medical service was a huge part of that, almost $5 million. But also, we are trying to offset going through truth and taxation and a property tax increase. And I think so far we've been able to do that.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Open Space Capital Fund. We're at almost $66 million. I'm guessing that's the Your Ranch, the 910, and the Skull Candy building. So how does that all get paid for?
So you're not talking about the bond, the $50 million bond. The Open Space Capital Fund, it depends on what we're talking about. The acquisition of these places comes from different places. For example, the Skull Candy building, we did bond separately. It's a sales tax bond for the acquisition and then the improvements in that building. We're actually working through the improvements right now, and we're hoping to get a consultant on board within the next couple of weeks that will be working through the winter in preparing that building for occupancy in the spring. I'm saying spring because that's a 3-month time frame, and I want that much lead time and having a little bit of flexibility there. But we're hoping by May or June, we're ready to move the entire library from the Kimball Junction area, from the Richens building, into this new space in the Skull Candy building. I think those we have a capital projects presentation as well coming up with council. I believe that is next week as well. So we'll be highlighting a lot of those. A lot of those are road projects, and some of those are quite boring. But I'm very excited about the Skull Candy building. I think that's going to be something the community can really celebrate.
Okay, so we will follow up with that then. The Skull Candy, though, what's happening there on the second floor? Do we know yet?
We're going through a kind of a spatial analysis, and we don't know for sure yet. We've asked the architects to meet with the individual departments that could be up there to see what might be. We think we do have enough space to accommodate all that we want to, but it's I don't think it's going to be tight, but I think we're also planning for the future. But I don't think it's going to be as much space as everybody thinks it's going to be. I don't think we're going to be rattling around up there. I think we're going to have and I also am really excited about the opportunity to bring several different departments into the same space. I think it's really a great opportunity for us to break down silos, to have transportation interacting with lands and natural resources, interacting with the health department. Sometimes we sit in our departments and in our silos, and with an organization this size, we're constantly trying to get our staff to work together, not only just in providing the services that we do, but in just camaraderie and how do we make this a better place to work and to live, not just because we're paid more or anything like that, but we have a culture that we're trying to establish. And I think this second floor is a real opportunity for us to really break down some of those silos and to interact with communications, interacting with our transportation department. It'll be kind of, I think, an exciting opportunity for us.
Okay, you kind of mentioned different subjects happening later on through these budget discussions. Is there a schedule that people can look, so if they're interested in a certain topic?
At the end of all of the presentations for the budget, I have a slide that talks about the schedule, and it has changed because we did miss that one meeting. We've added this Friday meeting, but if you look at I think it's slide 10 of the presentation that's tomorrow, you can see the times we've scheduled these different budget-specific presentations, and we'll go through those capital projects on one of those. And then, of course, I mentioned this Friday the emergency services sales tax and truth and tax and transient room tax.
Right. All right. Let's see. Later on, Basin Recreation and a number of other special services districts will be presenting their recommended budgets. With Basin Rec again, they have presented one budget with a tax increase, one without. So, what's your sense? I mean, does the council has to approve this, right?
They certainly don't need to approve the tax increase. I think that Basin has the opportunity to make a case why they need that increase. If you looked at some of the reasons why they've proposed that, it's kind of the reasons I was talking about with those other counties. It's inflation. It's I think they said aging facilities. It's personnel. And just the demand on services. This is a key service that our community requires and demands. And I think it's a I think the cause is just here. I think it's an 8% fee increase that they're proposing, and then a 15% tax increase. They've got additional employees in that proposal as well. So this is them dropping their tentative budget and then also and having those two options, I think, for council to address.
Okay. Let's see. The council has also considered the issuance and sale of $99 million in bonds. This is for the 1.1%, up to 1.1% impact of Communities Tax Act that could be used for transportation infrastructure improvements and transit projects. So it's going to come back for a final approval tomorrow? I mean, are they going to set a rate?
I think they will. And if there's some of the slides talk about the revenue that we would generate if we did go at the 1.1%, which is around $17 million or less. And there's some different percentages that the council could address and discuss. This was unfortunately on the agenda for the meeting that we did have to cancel. So we've kind of kicked this can down this road to here. And we would like some direction here and a decision, if we could. This agenda item is not only to set an ordinance to implement the fee, but it's also a parameters resolution about bonding against that fee. And then that would start a 30-day clock, and we'd have a public hearing in December about this fee and about bonding against it. So. Yeah, we're excited about this. As I mentioned before when I was on here last, this fee is intended for some transit and transportation capital projects. We've anticipated and thought about a $99 million a bond for everything from BRT to some transit center in the Kimball Junction area. We're also trying to look forward and what's transit and transportation going to look like in the next 5 to 10 years as leading up to the Olympics? What's it going to look like? Do we have an opportunity to really engage with folks in the Salt Lake Valley in transit opportunities? So we're trying to really look forward with this, and right now we don't know what we don't know, but we're only going to bond as we go. It'll be in phases, and we're going to just take these projects as we get them.
Okay, so if the county council doesn't authorize up to the 1.1 maximum percent, would you still go ahead and bond for $99 million?
It's unlikely we'd bond for the full amount of $99 million, but we can only bond up to half of what we receive during the year. So if it's $16 million, we'd only bond up to $8 million. Now, $8 million over 20 years is what?
$160 million?
Yeah, that's right. So it's plenty, but it's still plenty of money for at least what we've targeted today. So there's certainly an opportunity to go at less. I know that we have received some concern from our area businesses, from the chamber about the adding more tax. It's adding to our checkout rates throughout the hotels. Again, this is only a tax in the unincorporated areas of Summit County. It doesn't affect any of the municipalities. But it's still adding to our checkout rates, and groups would be concerned there that come here and do conventions and service in our hotels. But we also don't want to implement a tax that's too little. We don't want to go to 0.5% and then decide we need more and then change it to 0.7. We don't want to kind of bounce around that way either. So I think there's maybe a happy medium here that we can strike that we'll be happy with.
Okay. As you know, last week, Third District Court Judge Richard Morozik ruled that Summit County property owner Brianne Krisiak cannot access her 23 acres of landlocked property within the 910 ranch via a Jeep road as she has been. So any word whether she will appeal?
I haven't heard. I think that individual has 30 days to do so, and we're happy with the ruling and waiting to see what happens as far as that goes. And then if there is no appeal, maybe we can come to some kind of conclusion there together and just negotiating directly with the individual.
Yeah. Is there any issue here, though, with getting the funding? My understanding is that the grant was filed right around the time that we found out about this cloud on the title, and I guess I didn't see that mentioned in the grant proposal. It certainly may have been there, but I'm guessing, I mean, would a federal agency have funded a disputed property? If they had known?
I'm not sure. I've never heard of this being a concern with that. We've known all along with it when we signed the option agreement that we were taking on this legal situation from the owner. It's never been mentioned. We are actually quite excited about the possible opening up of the government again that might kickstart this to closing. We have actually had some movement and some conversation with federal employees on getting that appraisal finished up. And again, we believe that the money is here in state coffers and we're ready to close.
Okay. So do we know, though, if Summit County disclosed the cloud on the title when they did apply for that grant?
I don't know.
Okay. Anything else?
If I could highlight, at 4:50 p.m., there's a item number 2 is a consideration of an MOA between Wasatch County, an organization called Jovid Mark II LLC, and Summit County. And this is around the Wakara area in the 200 South Gun Club Road. There's been quite a bit of concern there in the Camas Valley about how Wakara and Tuhe access their property. I just wanted to call this agreement out because this is essentially Summit County, Wasatch County, and the Wakara development agreeing to a change in how that access would come. The proposal in a nutshell is abandoning 200 South or Gun Club Road from the Gun Club itself to the first property on 200 South. We would actually abandon that road and Wakara would be I say forced, they are agreeing to go from the Gun Club north through the parcel there that is actually part of the Your Ranch, and to pave a road and a trail directly to 248. So we believe this would keep the Camas side, the 200 South side, rural. It would still be a dirt road. It would actually tee into the Your Ranch. There would be a lot of opportunities with the abandonment of that road to create more of a recreation in that entire parcel, both on the north side and the south side of 200 South. So kind of complicated. I just know that there were a lot of individuals both in the basin and the South Summit area that were really interested in this issue. And the way that it's phrased on the agenda left a lot of questions because I think a lot of people didn't know it was coming. So I wanted to call that out and let people know. And if they have any interest in that, please pay attention or let me know if you have questions.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't catch that either. So, okay. Yeah. Hey, Shane, thank you.
Leslie, thank you. Happy Veterans Day to all our veterans. Thanks for their service.
Yeah. That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Well, the South Summit Board of Education met last night, and on the phone with a recap of the meeting, I have the Superintendent of Schools, Greg Mon. Thanks for joining us, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. So the school board got an update regarding transportation from Jennifer Burr. Is she the transportation director?
She's transportation supervisor. Yep.
Okay. And what did she have to say?
Well, she just gave an update on the number of routes and things that we have, and gave an update on our buses as far as how many buses we're running, how many average miles per day, how many average miles per year, how many activities, field trips, that we took last year, because obviously we don't have that information this year since we're in this year, but updated them that we're hoping to get the new bus that we ordered. We're hoping to get that in the near future, just waiting for that to be delivered. And really just wanted to make sure and keep the board and community updated on how smoothly things are going for the transportation department. She's doing a great job. This is her first year doing it, and she's knocking it out of the park.
Great. Well, like municipalities, I know Park City, they get about an 80% discount on buses because of the transit. Do school districts get a similar discount?
I'm not sure, because we just go through a bid process regardless. So I'm not sure what discounts there are, but the bus that we're waiting on, I think it's about $165,000 or so, right around there.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money, but it does get a lot of use and a lot of miles. And there are more expensive buses, but this is This we got one that has the nose on the front of it, so it saves a little bit of money that way.
All right. Well, discount was really the wrong word. The word I was looking for was subsidy. That city, yeah. Park City would get a 80% subsidy. Again, okay. It's tax dollars, federal tax dollars. But,
sure.
But school districts may not get that similar subsidy. Yeah. Mm. All right. School board also discussed the district's artificial intelligence policy. Is this something new, or is this just something that you're rearranging?
We're working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so currently, right now, in our policies, if teachers are going to use artificial intelligence in their classrooms, it needs to be part of their disclosure. They need to make sure parents are aware of that. AI is you know, moving at breakneck speed, and it's one of those things that if we're not as proactive as we can be, then we're left to be reactive. And so I updated the board on the draft policy and where it was at in that process. And so right now where we're at is the draft policy has been shared with principals, and they are taking that policy and procedure to the school community councils so that we can get as much input from parents as possible, because AI for some is not a concern, and for some parents AI is a major concern. And so we want to reflect our community values while also making sure that we're providing a safe, secure way to how AI is used in classrooms, whether that's teacher-facing or student-facing.
Okay. So what does the policy do?
It establishes, and in some cases reaffirms, one of the biggest concerns about AI in schools is privacy. AI is there to constantly be learning, and student data privacy is a real concern for schools, obviously. And so part of some of the policy deals with how we ensure that data is not compromised, and it can be compromised from any number of ways, one of which students sometimes will put their own, they won't think twice about it, putting their information in. And once they've done that, they potentially could be compromised. And so part of that policy is making sure that any AI that we're using, that we have an MOU with them on the data privacy that meets the state and federal requirements. And then also making sure that the AI that we're using as efficiently, as effectively as possible, that especially if it's student facing, that it's not removing the human element, but actually helping the human element. It's there to help enhance student learning, not to replace a teacher or an experience.
Okay. You'll also kind of get an update on just the enrollment numbers. That those numbers had to be turned in for an official count October 1st. So how were things looking there?
Our enrollment, last month we reported out, our enrollment is down some, which is generally the trend across the state. As a state, we're a declining enrollment state, and we are one of almost every school district that also is seeing a declining enrollment.
So what are we talking about? I mean, 10 students, 100 students?
No, I think we were down about 50 students, as I recall, which, if you're a district of 30,000 is nothing, but if you're a district of, 1,600, 50 is a bigger deal. So, and then last night, we, our business administrator, Robinson, reported out on our student-to-teacher ratio at each school and each grade. Because the board, as we talked about enrollment last month, the board wanted to know what our student-to-teacher ratios were. And so we reported back on that last night as well.
Okay, I want to talk about that in just a minute, though. But in terms of the enrollment, does that jive with what was budgeted? I mean, are you going to be okay there?
Yeah, we'll be okay. We do have some new growth that is in the area, which helps also. Right now we're working with some USBE people on some of the recent changes to some of the state board rule. I think inadvertently created a negative for South Summit and a couple other districts around the state based on their county classification. And so we're working through those kinds of things, but you know, nothing earth shattering, but I think we'll be good. We budgeted for a decrease in enrollment, and it's one of the great things about having a conservative business administrator is he keeps us on the up and up and make sure that we're in the black. So
yeah,
he does a great job.
Okay, back to the class sizes. It looked like kindergarten had the highest class numbers, 22 students per teacher. Is that okay with the school board? I mean, or what would it take to bring in a fifth teacher?
Well, so that student to teacher ratio is actually, I mean, it's really right where we want it to be. Generally, we shoot for anywhere from 18 to 22 in that range, and it fluctuates. You can see if you look at this year's first graders, their classes were 20 last year, and so it fluctuates, and so that's some of the magic that we do with between myself and the business administrator and the principal in trying to anticipate fluctuations and things like that, because adding a teacher or taking a teacher away, those have they leave large ripples, if you will, as you do that. And so we try to do things looking at an aggregate, looking at a semi-long-term track record, as well as trying to look ahead. And so the 22 to 1 is actually, it's in that ideal class size still. You know, and you can see at Silver Summit Elementary, the student to teacher ratio is the smallest at 10 to 1.
Yeah.
There's certainly a smaller school, but yeah.
The board is continuing a master plan to guide future growth. Where do things stand there?
Last night, the board approved hiring an architectural firm. They're doing a long-term, you know, kind of a 20-year feasibility study, looking at the potential need, you know, for schools and where those might be, and you know, where they might be located, transportation, garage, things like that. We want to be able to take to our community a long-term plan that's something that we can stick with, that's sustainable, as far as, you know, it doesn't shift with the wind. Because I think a community deserves to know that, because the community, in the event we ever had, if we had to go to a bond, we would want our community to know what the long-term plan is for all of our schools, not just looking at it short-term. And so I appreciate the value that the board places on making sure that we have that long-term plan, so that we can give our community a long-term expectation, you know, that's bi-directional. So that's where we're at now. So they've approved that to move forward, and so that company, they've selected MHTN, and we'll be starting to move forward in that process with them.
Looking at some of the capital costs ahead of you, I saw $1.3 million for tennis courts. So does the district have any tennis courts at this point?
We do have tennis courts, they are functional right now. Obviously there's maintenance and things that we put into those, but we're looking at We've applied for a rural schools athletic facility grant. Depending upon how that comes in, that may help offset some of that cost. But we're looking at doing tennis courts, potentially pickleball courts, you know, as part of that, up over closer to our new baseball field and softball field, and make it something that not only gets used by students during the day, you know, in school, but also could be available for our community members to use as well.
Yeah, another $500,000 for new boilers at the aquatic facility. I guess I didn't realize the aquatics facility is a school district facility.
It is. It's owned and operated through the school district. It's not something you see very often. It's not real commonplace for a school district to own a recreation center. And that building, the last few years and for the next few years coming up, it's going to require some more expensive maintenance, but certainly something that you know, needs to be done in order to maintain the safety of the building. It is, like I said, it's different to hear that a school district has the recreation center. It's attached to the middle school, as you know, so our students do get to use it, and they do use that building. They use the pool and some of the different facilities, weight room and that during the day.
Okay. Anything else, Greg, you wanted to mention?
No, I appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Greg Mon is the superintendent of schools for the South Summit School District. We're in the studio now with an update from the People's Health Clinic CEO, Mari Lining. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It's nice to see you.
Well, thank you. It's been a while since we've seen you, so thanks for being here. First, let's just start with Live PC, Give PC. How was that for People's Health Clinic?
It was great. You know, we really appreciate the community rallying around the nonprofits, of course, is led by the Community Foundation. It's a fun day. It's really us celebrating the work that we do for the community.
All right. Well, we've heard so much in the news about the government shutdown, hinged on the fact that, you know, Democrats didn't want to relent until they knew that the tax subsidies for the American CARE Act would remain intact. I'm not sure how that's going to shake out, but I guess what are you anticipating? How is this going to impact the People's Health Clinic, if at all?
We are expecting a surge of patients. So, you know, the Affordable Care Act marketplace helps people who don't get insurance through work or through public programs like Medicaid or Medicare buy affordable coverage. It's really a lifeline for eligible working families, especially those in like hospitality, construction, small businesses. These are key sectors in Summit and Wasatch County. And, you know, what's changing in 2026 is these ACA tax credits expire December 31st, and without them, premiums are going to jump hundreds to thousands of dollars per year, which is going to directly affect working families. Utah is really vulnerable. In fact, we have one of the highest ACA enrollment rates in the country and the highest share of children enrolled in the country. About 28% of our Utah's ACA enrollment are kids. So, you know, as costs rise, families are going to drop coverage and kids are going to get dropped.
Yeah. Well, and I even know of a few people who plan to drop it just because it's like, where's this money going to come from? So,
well, absolutely. Like in November, we've already seen our insurance premiums go way up for re-enrollment, right? So insurers are, as a business, anticipating the loss of the ACA marketplace crew who tend to be younger, healthier individuals. So they've jacked up prices anticipating an older, more sick crowd that's going to cost them more money.
Right. So in terms of, again, that for People's Health Clinic, I mean, how are you ramping up then for this onslaught?
So what we want to do and what we are actively working on is expand our pediatric program. We currently have a pediatric program run by four absolutely incredible volunteer providers, but with this anticipated change in need, it's time for us to hire a staff pediatrician, really expand the program to make sure that kids are able to get the vaccinations they need, asthma care, developmental screenings, all of that on time. I mean, it is our responsibility as a community.
Wow. So anything else there that you want to hit on in terms of what you need to do?
Well, one concern we have is that the People's Health Clinic already is out of space. This year we did, or what we're projected to have done, is 21,000 patient encounters in our small clinic space. For us to expand our pediatric program, we need more space. And, you know, as it's been announced publicly, as mentioned by Shane Scott this morning, at least part of the Summit County Health Department is going to be moving to the School Candy building in May, and that timing could not be better. We're incredibly grateful that they've, you know, said that they'll be giving us more space, and so really Summit County Health Department is helping ensure that our children are going to be able to get the care that they need. It's a great public health move.
So that doesn't come at a cost to the health clinic?
They haven't actually approached us with what those costs look like. With our longstanding lease, our rent is $1 a year, which Nan Worrell, when she was the executive director, very kindly paid in 2009, she told me, so that $40 has been covered. We are expecting that there'll probably be some changes in maintenance costs, but that will all be worked out with the county. They're still working out the details, and we're waiting to hear from them. But we're, you know, again, incredibly grateful that they have considered us in this plan.
Okay. Let's see. But at this point, you just don't know how much room you're going to get.
We don't know how much room, but they have at least 5 clinic rooms, as well as, you know, a lot of space. We're in a very small portion of the building. I believe it's a 25,000 square foot building, and so again, there'll be lots of conversations on the table, especially around it becoming a public health hub. I mean, it would be incredible to have other nonprofits that care for our underserved community members offer healthcare in the building as well, so we can have full wraparound services. It's really exciting to think about.
Yeah, not a day goes by that we don't hear about artificial intelligence. We were just talking to the superintendent of South Summit High School about their new AI policy, and it sounds like People's Health Clinic also using AI. How so?
Well, we are proudly the first adopter of AI retinopathy screening in Utah. We have a contract with Digital Diagnostics with an AI retinopathy camera. Our providers are able to use in real time during appointments to screen our patients who are at risk of going blind from uncontrolled diabetes. And just in the 2 months that we've had it up and running, we've actually prevented 2 cases of imminent blindness by sending our patients immediately down to the Moran Eye Center in Salt Lake City so they're able to get treated. So, I mean, the ROI on this diabetic retinopathy camera supported by AI is infinite. And that's where it's fun to be the People's Health Clinic, because we're private and able to make decisions quickly and nimbly. We're able to be really early adopters of technology that's out there to help resolve healthcare disparities.
We talk about, you know, it's like even the weather folks are a little bit concerned that AI can do a better job forecasting weather than they can. I mean, is that where the medical field is headed as well? I mean, that we can just input conditions and have AI spit out what's wrong with us?
I mean, this is a fascinating time in healthcare, certainly in my life, and I've been a physician since 2002. I've never seen a time of such dynamic change. I think there are definitely going to be sectors within healthcare that can be replaced by AI, especially supervised learning, like this AI camera that's, you know, making decisions off of having been trained by, you know, thousands and thousands of examples of what diabetic retinopathy looks like. In terms of actual medical decision making, I think AI will play a role in that as well. My personal opinion is we will still need to have human oversight to ensure that it's correct. You know, in terms of running a free clinic, we really want to leverage it to make sure that our patients can have, you know, full healthcare access at the same, you know, rate as anyone else. We don't want them to be waiting for services, and that's where AI can be particularly helpful for us. Our operations director, Dahlia Gonzalez, who was on KPCW a few months ago, is just incredible, and she's looking at how we can use AI to improve clinic efficiencies, along with a really wonderful volunteer consultant, Bruce Fryer. So we believe by the end of 2026, we'll have fully integrated AI into the front desk, our medical assistant work, you know, helping clinicians with writing notes, translation. It's an exciting year for us.
And I just wanted to ask you, over the, since we've got a few minutes left, over the last few years, People's Health Clinic has received some impressive grants. What's the plan going forward here now that that grant money runs out? I mean, do you reapply for the grant? I mean, you got, what, $1 million from Melinda Gates?
The $1 million came actually from Mackenzie Scott. It was an incredible opportunity. And how we decided to use that money is we have fully allocated it over 3 years for extended hours. So we're open 3 evenings a week, and again, fully supported by her. I don't know if we will win a grant like that again. Over 6,000 organizations applied, and we had like a less than 6% chance of getting it. So it's kind of like getting into an elite university when you win a grant like that. We have lost some state grants this year that were funded by federal dollars. And so that's put us down over $100,000. That's where it's just incredibly important that we continue to fundraise and rally the community around the work that we do, because it's truly essential if we want to have a healthy community.
Okay. All right. Maury, anything else you wanted to mention?
I mean, just lastly, you know, we can't control federal policy, but we can control what happens in our own backyard. And, you know, going back to this urgent need to expand our pediatric program and fundraise around that, really, truly, no child in Summit or Wasatch County should go without a doctor. I think that's something that everyone can get behind, and that's really what community health means. And so you'll be hearing more about that.
Okay. Dr. Maury Lining, CEO of People's Health Clinic, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, more than 420,000 Utahns rely on the Affordable Care Act marketplace for health coverage. For many of them, the costs will go up next year if Congress doesn't extend some of the tax credits. The Utah News Dispatch reports that Utah State Senator Jen Plum joined two congressional Democrats in Washington, D.C. to urge Republicans to keep the subsidies so that Americans don't get priced out. A battle over preserving the enhanced tax credits is at the center of the ongoing government shutdown. Open enrollment for the ACA began November 1st, and planned costs are expected to dramatically increase next year if congressional leaders can't reach a deal. At a news conference, Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota said that a 60-year-old Utah couple earning about $83,000 will see their premiums increase by more than $19,000 per year if those subsidies end. For a family of four bringing in $64,000, she said the cost would triple, going up by more than $2,500. Plum, a Salt Lake City Democrat, said that Utah's hospitals and emergency rooms will take on a bigger burden if thousands drop their insurance because it becomes too expensive. As an emergency room pediatrician, she said she regularly seeks patients who can't afford coverage and wait until they're in crisis to seek medical attention. With a monthly average tax credit of $463, the monthly average marketplace premium for Utah residents is $70. That was according to a report from the University of Utah's Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute.